Philadelphia Union, San Jose Earthquake, DC United, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Edge Pass,
Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, Orlando City SC, Montreal Impact, NYCFC, Seattle Sounders.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
MLS Cup playoffs. I mean, does it get much better? It does not. What a wild week it's been so far. Still more to come, and then still another round after that. Thank you so much for taking a little interlude from the matches to download this episode of Pitch Pass. Very much appreciated. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at Pitch Pass, to do that, or pitchpass.com. Catch up on old episodes. We had a great conversation with Hercules Gomez last week that you should catch up on this week. Speaking of this week, we've got the general manager of Seattle Sounders all lined up and ready to go for later on the show. Garth Lagerwey will join us. But first, the man who leveled things at RFK on Wednesday, and then United went on to win things against New England Revolution, Chris Pontius joins us right now. Chris, welcome to the show. Have we had you on this year?
Maybe earlier in the year. It's been a while.
Really early in the year. I feel like we haven't had you on this year. Maybe last year was the last time we had you on.
Maybe. You miss my voice,
Roach? I do. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, man, we haven't had Pontius on in a while. But now you're doing stuff, and it's like, okay, let's get him on. Let's have him talk now.
Yeah, and you want to get some stupid stories out of me as well.
Well, you know, I like hearing about your life. It's much more interesting and fascinating than mine, that's for sure. All right, I guess so. The first thing, and I haven't talked to you about this at all pre-conversation because I want it fresh, and I'm sure everybody else is kind of hanging on as well. Please tell everyone that your match where you came off early against New England, purely precautionary. Everything's fine. You are good to go heading into the next round of the playoffs.
Precautionary, taking it day to day.
Chris, I maybe you didn't hear me. Precautionary, totally good to go for the next round of the playoffs. That was the second part.
I repeat my statement. Oh. Precautionary, taking it day to day. I got out of there before anything bad happened. But one of those things, you know, it was a short week coming from Sunday to Wednesday. Legs felt a little heavy going in, and, you know, just knew I had to get through the match. So at that point, I was risking more damage and just got out of there before that happened.
Was it that when you were chasing, I think it was Tierney, right at the beginning of the second half, kind of?
Yeah, that was the play.
And I guess being of what you've been through, you know your body better than most, even athletes.
Yeah.
What is it? Did it grab? What happens where you go, oh, wait a second, hang on?
Yeah, it just grabbed a little. Didn't feel right. One of those things. Nothing. I mean, I've experienced the bad ones, and it's not a bad one, so that's good news.
All right, because you know, we're at the point now where, like, I didn't watch the next 10 minutes of the match because I was too busy checking out the bench just to see how much people were working on you, what your body language is like. You're at that point with us now, Chris.
I know. That's not a good point. But yeah, it's been tough few years, but especially, you know, I thought I was coming into form as of late, and so I'll just do everything I can do to get up back on the field.
All right, because, you know, if you were my girlfriend, you and I are at the point now where if you text me and say I'm going over a friend's house, I might swing by the friend's house just to see if your car's parked out there to say where you say you're supposed to be. that's where we're at now.
You don't trust me?
I just want to make sure everything is just like we said it was going to be moving forward, and that's why I stayed in this relationship. So just making sure, that's all. That's not trust. Just confirming.
I'm 28 years old now. That's not a young 21-year-old chicken.
You know, and I'm gonna hit you with this early right now. Get it out of the way, just so you know. The most uncomfortable question is gonna be one of the first ones I ask because I've asked you this many, many times. Your leg situation, is it more frustrating to the team, to yourself, or to your lady friends? Told you it's gonna be early, Chris. Got it right out there early.
To me.
To you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Your lady friend, okay with these groin situations, you being on the shelf in more ways than one, it's fine. That's a fine situation. They can handle that.
No, only one lady friend right now. So.
All right. So, yeah. So, can she handle that? Is she, when you say, you know what? Again, I got the situation. Tonight, we're just going to have to, we're going to have to legitimately Netflix and chill because I got some situations going on. Is that, she's okay with that?
I think that might be my Halloween costume. I've seen that thrown around a few times. It's a good one. The people are creative with that one.
Yeah. You can do so much with that. It's great.
Exactly.
So, yesterday, as we record yesterday, we're talking about Wednesday's match, DC United versus New England Revolution. When Juan hits that goal, and I know you're behind the play at that point, as a player, do you just go, damn, and you just head back and go, all right, well, tip your cap and move on? That wasn't a defensive breakdown. That was just a moment of brilliance.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, with most goals, you can look at them and break them down. There's usually five or six things that went wrong that, you know, someone could have bailed someone out here. But then there are also goals where you just got to applaud them and be like, there's just nothing we can do about that. And it's a great effort. I mean, it's an unbelievable goal. So, like I said,
yeah.
As a fan of the game, you know, I didn't want it happening to my team. But
yeah,
at some point, you just got to applaud a good goal. And that's what that was. It was an unbelievable strike, you know. Sports Center, I think it's number one today.
Number one. It was the number one play of the day. It was crazy.
Yeah. There you go, right there. That tells it all. No, but I liked our response after it, and we rebounded and, you know, got the W. We're moving on.
Yeah, I mean, for the team, it's great all around because the league gets the exposure of having that wonder goal on TV, mainstream sports channels, whatever. You guys walk away with the victory. Everybody's a winner if you're a DC United fan.
Yeah, exactly. So it added a little drama. It's good. We've had too many of those drama games at home this year, though, where we're coming from behind, but we always seem to do it.
Well, Chris, I don't know if you know this or not, but I am a season ticket holder as of this year for DC United. So I've seen a lot of this early match drama unfold as it happens live. And yeah, it's been a situation. I talked to Bobby earlier in the year or the mid part of the year on the show. And he went so far as to say that you guys actually, or the team has brought in like sports psychologists to discuss these early game lapses. Can you confirm or deny that?
Confirmed.
Wow. So
we don't talk about the early game. I mean, we talk about them, but the psychologist, they're just there to, you know, kind of bring us back together and stuff. It's nice, you know. Ben always says it's nice to hear a new voice, which it is at times. So just to get your mind thinking in a different way, because you get, you know, a long season can be monotonous, and you know, it's just nice to hear a different voice and look at things in a different way. So, but we've talked about the early lapses, and, you know, at times it's, you know, maybe we just, but then again, we saw, there's been games where I thought we started well and then give up a goal late. And, you know, we can't come back from those late ones. So I guess it's better to have the early goal
than
the late one.
Agreed. And, you know, I was gonna ask you about the mindset of the team is like, okay, well, we're down a goal. We've been in this situation a number of times, and that's got to help. But the thing is, this isn't like one guy shutting off constantly over and over again. It's a different person almost every single time, and that's where you kind of start scratching your head going, well, they're not sharing the same brain, so how is this happening for different guys throughout the season?
I if you could put your finger on it, that would be great, because
okay.
I can't. But like I said, at that point, if we do go down, there's no panic within our team, which is amazing, you know. It's just, okay, how are we going to manage these next 10 to 15 minutes? How are we getting our chances and figuring out the game from there? So it's been the part of the team of not panicking and just going about the business, going about our game plan has been great.
Does the sports psychologist ask you about your feelings a lot?
No. I don't get into that with them.
But how do you feel about that? How does that make you feel?
If you could just make us win, that'd be great. That's all I
know. You know what? We don't have to worry about any of this stuff. Just make us win. Whatever you need to do, whatever you need to flip on in my brain, flip that switch and then you can get out of here.
Exactly. I don't care how. Just make us win.
You mentioned the response to Aguadelo's wonder strike. in the match, and you had the response. Great play set up by Fabi as far as drawing the foul, as far as bringing in the service. You had a lot of work to do as well. And I thought, and this is after you scored knots in Columbus, the last home match against the Fire, I was like, damn, I forgot Chris was that fast. And then I did the same thing against New England. I was like, damn, I forgot Chris could actually jump, not like a white guy, but like somebody who had some ups. And then I remembered, oh, wait, it's because Chris is healthy again. How much fun is it? How liberating is it for you to be able to do these things that you know you always can do but haven't been able to do?
That's been the most frustrating thing for me, like with dealing with injuries coming back, is knowing that you're capable of playing at a certain level and your body's just not letting you do that. So body and mind, because, you know, when you come back from injuries, you're rusty. The game's a little bit faster than it used to be for you. That's probably the most frustrating thing. Were you saying that I have white man syndrome and I can't jump?
But I'm saying you don't have white man syndrome. Like have ups.
Okay.
You have you have surprisingly good leaping ability.
I know. Until I go up on a basketball hoop and try and dunk.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's not get out of our comfort zone. Let's make sure we keep it straight. But I look at you and I think to myself, okay, if we have at any given moment Saborio, Bobby, Birnbaum, we've got guys who you need to mark on set pieces. And, maybe this is what happened. I can't speak for New England. But if you're marking all these guys who have leaping ability, or you think to yourself, these guys are good headers, and then you come out of nowhere and do that, then it's like, well, wait a second. We can't mark everybody. So that's another thing that you're bringing to the table that people aren't expecting.
No, and especially when you look at a lot of big games, they're usually close affairs, and the set piece, you know, decides a lot of them. So we talked about that going in, and New England's very, very good at attacking set pieces. They throw a bunch of different things at you. They even did one last night where they have Jones roll off, and he's just trying to head it across, and they're recycling their run. So they're very tricky with that stuff. So we were aware of what they could do on it, but we were also aware of what we can do. And like you said, we've got some real threats when it comes to putting the ball in a box, and some people that you're definitely going to have to pay attention to. So, you know, if they leave me open, then feel free to do that. I'd love that. But even if I'm marked, I'm still looking to get my head on the ball.
You know, and we're not talking about personal feelings or anything, but how much of a pain in the ass is it to play against Jermaine Jones? And I don't know how much you come up against him, since you're kind of out wide and he's in the middle, but is he difficult to play against?
Yeah, he's very difficult. He's a physical guy.
Yeah.
So that, you know, he's very physical. You know, he's a winner. He just wants the ball. He's going into hard tackles. You know, he's demanding a lot out of his teammates. So, you know, those are the type of guys you want to play with and not against.
Was that a handball by Sean Franklin? Because I know you've seen the replay by this point.
No, I didn't see the replay. I don't know what you're talking about.
I didn't think you did. I totally, yeah, that's right. You just put that out of your mind onto the next one, right?
What do you think? Do you think it was a handball?
Well, I was at the match. I don't know if I mentioned it in this conversation, Chris, but I'm a season ticket holder now. And so I was at the match, and I was on the other side. So I actually had a better view of the one that was called against New England, which I didn't think really was a handball. But if that was a handball, that Sean Franklin one is a little dicey. And I'm saying this as a United fan.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't score on the PK, though, so.
No, and, you know, a great question for you is, because Fabi was taking the PKs towards the beginning of the season in the middle, then he had a run of bad luck, and then Rolf picked up the PK mantle. Now that he's missed, are you next in line as the PK guy?
Rolfi's our guy right now, Rolfi or Fabi, whichever one of those are feeling it during the game. He's been rolled. I mean, if you just look at the PKs he's hit this year, he's been clutch with them. So, I'll leave it to those two guys right now.
I'd like you to go over and pick up the ball, though. They can take it out of your hands, but you're picking it up so that everybody goes, oh, this guy wants it, but he's being overruled. But he definitely wants it.
Yeah, then you end up on the Sports Center, not top 10 for looking like an idiot.
Because everybody looks around and goes, all right, if you want it, have it. No. You're supposed to take it off of me. I don't want it.
Yeah, we've all seen those fights, and they don't look pretty, and you just make yourself look like an idiot. So,
hey, speaking of fights, Chris, where were you when the situation happened with Jermaine towards the end of the match? Where were you at in relation to that?
Sitting on the sideline, yelling at the ref to give him a red card.
Okay, but sitting, though. You didn't overexert yourself.
No.
Okay.
I might have stood up to yell and probably threw like a fist or a finger, but that's a red card every single time. We got punished for it last year with Fabi doing the same, so I'm sure there'll be some suspension handed down to as well.
You know, and I as soon as that happened, I thought of that, and I was like, if he doesn't get at least 6 games, this is going to be ridiculous, because that's what Fabi got, and it really put him behind the eight ball for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they come with, but I'd expect something hefty.
You know, it's bad when the other team has to come over and is like, "Hey, dude, step off a little bit." And when it's Perry, you're like, "Wow, man, this guy must really be fired up." If Perry is just like, "Uh-oh, come on, back off!" Like he's got to come in and get in between Jermaine and the ref. That's how you know things are bad, when the other team is jumping in.
Perry's never one to sit there.
No, he's like, "Go ahead, go get yourself sent off." But Perry was like, "Hey, dude, this might be too far."
Yeah, usually Perry's instigating stuff, so that was surprising to see.
And my favorite part, because I watched the match when I got home just to prepare for our conversation, my favorite part was Marcus subtly handing the yellow card back to Geiger because it got knocked out of his hand.
I didn't even catch that.
Here, you might want this back. I think you might need this.
The finish, he's so nice.
Yeah, he's very, very classy of him. And I told Sebastian Salazar of Comcast Sportsnet this. I'm going to have to tell you this as well. That he's definitely my favorite player right now to watch on United. And I say that not to make you feel bad, but really, you know, you've already got my wife as the favorite player. And now my oldest son, who plays, he's got a Pontius jersey because you're his favorite player. So I really need to bring you down a notch in the Roach household by saying that you're not my favorite player.
I'm about to hang up.
Yeah, you shouldn't, because you've got my wife and oldest son.
I'm kidding. No, I like Marcus a lot. He's a classy player. The whole thing with our team is, you know, there's no superstar, you know, kind of thing. We don't have the big names that other teams have. We've managed to just do well as a unit. So I would hope that there's a lot of jerseys being bought and, you know, going from there.
You brought up earlier about the coming back from being a goal down and having that kind of resiliency to know that the game's not over. And I would imagine a lot of that comes from having kind of a veteran heavy team. How does that veteran savvy that you and almost everybody else on the team have, how does that help you coming off of Sunday's match versus Columbus as you went into the play-in game against New England?
I just think when you're younger, you're a bit more emotional and you handle losses and wins differently. You know, they always say don't let the highs get too high and don't let the lows get too low. So for us, obviously, Sunday was a low. It was the worst defeat I've ever had. That I can remember, even pro, college, or anything. So it was just one of those games where you just had to brush it off, and you knew, like, this is the one-off game. If we were to let that basically be a hangover game and come into Wednesday with a terrible mindset, then we'd be sent home. We'd be on vacation right now, and none of us wanted that to happen. So we pushed it aside. We really didn't talk about it too much. We just went about how we were going to beat New England. And I think maybe some younger players would stay with them for a little bit longer.
The Rodden Burgundy, well, that escalated quickly meme totally applied to that Sunday match.
Yeah, it did.
That escalated quickly. That escalated quickly. Did it help? Sure. Did it help? And you know, obviously, and you're a great person to ask because you mentioned the heavy legs going into that match on Wednesday. But did it help not having to think about that match longer than you had to, and knowing, okay, Monday it happened, Tuesday we got to get ready, Wednesday we're playing, rather than we got to wait a whole week, not know who we're playing, and think about other things? Okay, see, this is good. It's a good answer. I feel it coming.
No, I just think, I guess you could look at it both ways. You know, it's you could look at it as last year we had the break and, you know, we had the bye, and then we were going into the game against Red Bulls. We weren't exactly great in that. We were terrible actually in that first game, and we were far too behind the eight ball there. So, you know, this, I like this in the sense that, you know, we didn't really have a time to relax. You know, it was a big game on Sunday, big game yesterday. now we got another big game coming up on Sunday, but we're prepared for it. You know, there was no week to just relax and chill. Our mindset had to be focused the whole time. So I like it in that sense.
I've seen this written a couple of times, and it's starting to make sense to me now as I look at it. And I know Benny and Rolf actually said the same thing about that, and you just mentioned about that playing game and using that as a jump off point if you can get some momentum going and going into the weekend. The other thing is that kind of plays to your advantage is the fact that that match was at home. This match will be home as well, so you can keep in your normal routine, not have to worry about travel or anything like that. To me. And I know you're going to agree but not agree because you're benefiting this year. That kind of stinks because the higher seed now has a lot more uncertainty than what you guys have going into that first leg of the home and home.
Right. I mean, yeah. I personally like playing the first game at home. So that's where my chances on it.
You're right because last year against Red Bulls, you kind of laid that egg against New York. In New York, they were able to just come into D.C. and go, okay, we know exactly what we have to do, and this is all we have to do, and we don't have to overextend ourselves. But you guys were the higher seed last year, and it should have been. I don't know what the solution to that situation, though, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, but because it's going to be different every single person you ask, so I don't think there is a solution.
True.
I guess every team probably feels a different way, but every person feels a different way about it, so... personally, I think it's better to have the home game at first. Hopefully you get off on the right foot and then go from there and figure out how to manage an away game at a tough place to manage it.
I wanted to ask you, because I usually ask players about other players on their team just to get a vibe on whether what I'm thinking is kind of what's going on and what I'm seeing. And, you know, driving home after that match last night, I thought to myself, is Nick DeLeon underrated in MLS? Because he's not one of the guys that you hear about, I want to say ever, on the national scene. And even that, and this is what kind of started in my head was, you think about Rolf, you think about Fabi, you think about Bill, you think about yourself now coming back into form, you think about Perry. Nick's not one of those guys that you mention as you start rattling off names, and yet whenever we get to this type of time of year, he's one of the guys that's always in the middle of everything that's happening.
Yeah, he's a big game player. No, Nick is definitely underrated in terms of his play in MLS. For us, he's been huge. And I even look back to 2012, his rookie year. You know, and what he did for us in the playoffs. Came in, scored that big goal against New York to move us on, and then scored against Houston in Houston to get us started. Obviously, that series didn't turn out the greatest for us, but. So, you know, you ask players to step up in big games, and Nick's done that. You know, last night, the way he started that play to get Rolfi that goal and his combination with Fabi, that's big time. So, definitely underrated play.
That play unfurled in slow motion, and that literally happened right in front of me. So I saw it happen, and I'm like, how long are you just going to let Nick stand there in the box with the ball? Like, are we going to step to him? Or are we going to challenge him? And then I saw the Fabi run happening. I'm like, you see Fabi doing the longest looping run ever. It was just, it all happened in slow motion, and to the point where when Rolf scored, I was like, wow, all right, that worked.
Yeah, no, it was great. Great awareness from both of them, and then the run from Rolf to peel off the side and get to the penalty spot, or not to the penalty spot, but it was great how it all worked out.
So I want to ask you a question. It's a serious question, and I know, and I'm not asking you this to put you on the spot or tip hand or anything like that, but you're out of contract at the end of the year. The question isn't so much about what's going on the pitch, but it's how much does that uncertainty affect you in your everyday life? Today it's a random day during the week. As you're driving home, how much do you think to yourself, I might be packing up and moving at some point, or I might not be able to do this at this time in my life anymore? How much does that go through your mind in a regular day at this point in this kind of process?
Obviously, you're aware of it, but. I don't let it affect me too much. I'll start thinking about it when season's over, to be honest. So that's why we have agents and stuff like that for us to handle those stuff and make it easier on us. But, yeah, you're definitely aware of your situation. And You know, it should be an interesting offseason as far as what happens with all that stuff.
When are you like one of those, and I'm trying to think what sport it happens most often in, probably baseball, where you say, look, we can negotiate in spring training, but once the season comes, we're not talking till the end of the year.
No, because I don't, I'm very open-minded about all that stuff. I know some people are, you know, they don't want it just doesn't bother me, the contract negotiations going on during the year. Because like I said, it's normal, your agent is handling most of it, so I don't let it stress me out. I guess some people it can get to and affect their play, but it never did that with me.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because I'm totally grilling you right now, but if this isn't professional athlete working or doing a job and having that uncertainty, this is life. So I ask this question as you as a person, because if we were in a situation where the ratings were bad at my radio station, I would have the uncertainty of, oh, they could be firing me, or I could be getting laid off if I was working a traditional job. How do you not let it affect you? How is it just the way you're wired, or do you say to yourself, look, nothing I can do about it, head down, let's do our job?
Well, because there's always the next week, right? And there's always the chance to change people's minds. So you have, you've seen it plenty of times. People go through bad spells, and you can go through a bad spell at work, then you can bring in a couple of deals the next month, and everyone's mindset changes on you. It's a lot. It's a roller coaster ride. At times, it's ups and downs of life. But I think those ups and downs of life, you wouldn't want it to just be easy coasting the whole way.
Don't appreciate it as much, Chris. You don't appreciate it as much.
Yeah, so you appreciate the hard work you put in, and you see the results pay off. So that's the excitement of it all. And sure, it's nerve-wracking at times, just like it is for anyone. But the excitement of seeing your work pay off and everything you've done to achieve where you're at, that's what gets me going. That's what motivates me.
Did you learn that from the sports psychologist?
No, that's from mom and dad.
So as we move forward, and this will be a tough question for people to hear, because probably by the time they're listening to this, the answer will already be given. Do you want another shot at Columbus Crew, or do you got a little something for Red Bulls?
We've got a little something for both teams. we've got revenge tractors on both fronts. So I welcome both. It wouldn't hugely matter to me. Obviously, the rivalry with New York is something special, so those games are ones I really look forward to.
And I agree. And I think as a United fan, I want Red Bulls for a shot at MLS Cup. And if I was in your situation, I would go, you know what? I want Columbus Crew coming in here thinking that they just rolled us 5-0 and that this is going to be a cakewalk because of what they just did. So I'll take you, Columbus, this round, and we'll get New York in the next round after that.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, we might have to go through both of them to get their set. I don't care who we have first. We're gonna have to bring our A game. They're both very, very good teams.
Do we have anything else that we have to go over, Chris?
You tell me.
Well,
have you
been upgraded from day to day to good to go for Sunday? Has that happened during our conversation?
After my seat warmer in my car, it's been just no.
You know, dude. But you mentioned that because you have it on right now, right? Because I don't know if you know this or not. I CrossFit, Chris. I posted a couple of things on Instagram.
Instagram. I see you doing your personal records, your PR.
Exactly. And so whenever the back gets a little tight after an especially difficult wad, that seat warmer, even in the middle of summer, that helps loosen you up. And I know you have it on right now because you just mentioned it.
No, see, I ride in with Steve, and he'll always turn it on, and I know it's on my butt.
starts to heat up a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Am I gonna? You know what I enjoy watching? I enjoy watching those CrossFit fails. When am I gonna see you on one of those where the bar just like takes over and then you fall backwards and stuff like that? When can I see you on one of those fails?
Well, that's every week. I banned any flash photography or videoing in the gym when I'm in there because of that reason.
I do enjoy those videos though. They're fun.
Hey, Chris, can I? Is it too late to get out in the D.C. area and hit some balls?
hit some golf balls?
Yeah, like because you're a Cali guy, so I'm sure it's a little chilly for you now. If you had the week off and you weren't playing, would you try to get out this coming weekend?
I would. Yeah, I'd go smash some balls with you.
This is awkward because I wasn't inviting you to hit balls with me. I was just like, if I wanted to hit with somebody else, could I do that? It was my question. Now it's awkward. See.
Who else you want to hit with?
I have other friends that I can hit balls with.
put on some Under Armour. I've been here for 7 years. California's worn off on me a little bit.
Oh, okay. So, but my question stands: how late in the season will you go out and play? Like, I'm really gauging how big of a golfer you are, and I imagine you are because every time I see your Instagram pictures, which is few and far between, by the way, there's some golf related aspect going on.
Yeah, there usually is. Davey Arnaud got me into it pretty heavy. So it depends. If I have a bad round, I won't go out for another 2 weeks. But if I have a good round, then I'll be maybe out twice a week. I'm still not good.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you say bad round to good round, what's the difference in the number from bad to good?
A good round's an 85. That's... A bad round's 95.
Dude, that's good.
So
what's Dave? What is Davey shoot?
I know you're the type of golfer that... I found my ball. Like, it was just in the woods that you just dropped another. I know you're that type of golfer.
Well, yeah, dude, that's how I get to 120. I mean, it's not like I'm shooting 76 and cheating. Come on, what's Davey shoot?
Davey's a 3 or 4 handicap.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
And so what game are we playing?
Pretty good.
What game are we playing that? What game are we playing that you feel like you are competitive? Because whenever we go out and my friend's like, "Oh, let's play Wolf," and I go, "I stink. I can never do that." What game do you play where you feel like you can hang with Davey?
Well, Davey's my teammate, so we play me and Davey versus.
That's
nice. I'm smart about it.
Very good.
Me and Davey versus Taylor Kemp and Steve Birnbaum. So it usually comes out to an even game, and by even, me and Davey usually win.
So. How's Davey feeling?
He's feeling good. I think, you know, his concussions are tough. So
yeah, they are.
He's frustrated, you know, at a certain extent. So, it's one of those things where it's not a muscle injury. There's no real protocol, like, as to when you will be back. You're back when your body says you'll be back and when you feel right. So he's just managing it and being smart with it.
All right, I'm putting you as good to go on for Sunday, and I'm glad it was just precautionary purposes. You know what? Here's what I'm preparing myself for, and you're not answering this question, so don't even pretend like you're going to answer it. I'm preparing for 30 minutes of Chris Pontius in the second half. That's what I'm in my head. That's where I'm going.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. That's good. That's nice.
Like you said, you already answered the question for yourself. You're always going
to
answer it.
You're not going to answer it, and I don't want you to, but that in my head, that's what I'm preparing for. Chris, thank you very much. We have tried to get a hang together with me, you, and Bobby. That'll never, ever happen because of Bobby. So I think you and I, and now I'm officially throwing it out there, you and I might have to get out and play at some point to hang because Bobby will not. He keeps standing us up.
You let me know when the kids let you come out and play. Right, see, you have some free time.
You didn't have to. We already put everything on Bobby, and then you come and then put the load back on me. We already put it on Bobby, remember? Don't worry about that.
You're in the same boat as him. I'm the one with no kids.
It's true.
I've got nothing but time on my hands.
All right. Well, will you go, and for people who aren't in the area, they're like, what are you talking about? Will you drive to Maryland to golf?
I drive far to golf. I usually drive out to Leesburg. That's where I usually go.
Still Virginia, Chris. I asked you, it was a very, very particular question. Will you drive to Maryland to golf?
Yes, I'm golfed in Maryland, too.
Okay.
Northwest out there. I'll come out there.
Okay, good. Well, you know, you've been here 7 years. People in Virginia don't like to cross into Maryland and vice versa. For some reason, there's some imaginary line that says, oh, I can't go there. It's Virginia.
No, I don't have the same hatred that Maryland people have for Virginia and vice versa. I'm good with everything here.
You know what you are? Yeah. And here's the perfect ending. Are you ready? You are united. Yeah. You are united.
There we are.
Chris, thanks, man. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Roach.
One of the real good guys in MLS. really glad that he's rounding back into form. Crossing fingers, I don't know if you could tell, I was kind of nervous, still am, about his health, and hopefully he's ready to contribute again as DC United continues their MLS Cup playoff run. Switching gears out to the Western Conference, Seattle Sounders, big win on Wednesday versus LA Galaxy to propel them to the next round of MLS Cup playoffs. The man who helped construct the team is our guest now. It's General Manager Garth Lagerwey. Wait, Garth, don't you have one of those fancy names? You're not the General Manager. What's your official title these days for Sounders?
It's GM and President of Soccer. So if you're going to say GM, fine too. Whatever.
I didn't know. Maybe you would become one of those sticklers who, once you get more titles, they have to all be listed off when you're ever introduced to somebody.
I only want to be compared to Theo Epstein. So if he's president of baseball for the Cubs, I want to be president of soccer. That is literally the full energy that went into it. So.
And that's what I was going to say. In the negotiation process, does your agent go, now he needs to be president of soccer. It doesn't have to mean anything, but he needs the title.
Exactly.
Well, what do you do at this time of year? Because I would assume, as general manager and president of soccer, your work is kind of done. This is the product, right?
For this season, I mean, you're talking to the coaching staff, obviously, and, you know, managing through, the team side stuff comes up all the time. But right now, we're doing budgets for next year, which for me is significant because I haven't been through an off-season cycle here yet. So it's, about how we allocate our resources efficiently on the soccer side and highlight the things I want us to highlight, across the whole platform of Academy, USL team, first team. So that actually stuff is exciting and interesting, and we're doing scouting, both for all three tiers, again, Academy, USL, and MLS.
It's funny because we forget that these professional franchises are businesses, and everybody, if you know anything about business, are doing budgets at this time. So it's just funny to think, while all the excitement is happening on the pitch, you're somewhere crunching numbers and handing in reports, which is the most tedious part of the job, probably.
It is, but weirdly, it's cool this time because it allows me to really learn the guts of the business. And so it's kind of one of those necessary deep dives that you probably only want to do once, but I'm in the middle of it, and right now it's kind of an interesting phase because it's such a different scale than Salt Lake was. We do so many more things. It's been interesting.
Do you make it rain now that you can?
apparently here it rains every day.
Exactly. Metaphorically and.
With 10 months, it rained 5 times the first 10 months I was here. And about 2 weeks ago, it started raining, and I'm assured that for the next 6 months, it's going to rain every day. So we'll see how that plays.
Do you prefer the rain over the cold? I mean, what's the trade-off for Garth Lagerwey?
I'm a Chicago guy, so I don't mind the cold. My wife does, though. So I think we would collectively maybe choose the rain. But I actually think anything with sunshine, like Utah was pretty cold sometimes, and it snowed a lot, but give me sunshine, I can make it work a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Now, to tie some things going on that you're doing with things on the pitch, you mentioned that this is really your first full off season with the team. How important is that, and how, I don't want to say behind the eight ball because you really weren't behind the eight ball, but how much catching up did you have to do during the season because you didn't have that off season with the club?
Definitely some learning on the fly, but the good news is it's still a foundationally a GM job, which is what I've been doing for the last 7 years. So, different club, different personnel, different scouting setup, different coaching setup, and all those things, trying to figure out how to work best within them, everything. But the principles, the guts of it, is all the same. And it's identifying players and signing players at a good value, and if you do that, you're gonna have a good team. And if you have a good team, hopefully you get yourself in a position to compete for titles.
Now, let me ask you, because you are the one of the few front office guys that I can have a layman's conversation with. Is your job the technical director? And if you are, why aren't you called the technical director? And if it's not, what would be the difference in these roles between GM and technical directors and so forth?
Sure. Chris Henderson is our sporting director. So I'm the president of soccer sport. And broadly speaking, that's what I would term Chris heads up our personnel department. At least that's how you'd refer to it in the NFL or Major League Baseball. And that means that we have this platform whereby, again, we handle the scouting and the player identification and the player development for all phases of the organization. Where I come in at the top is kind of strategically prioritizing how we're going to spend our money, how we're going to organize our coaching staff, how we are going to, I've used this phrase a lot, vertically integrate the Academy platform to the USL platform up into the Sounders, such that we produce players that are useful to the team when they get there. We've emphasized trying to make develop more technical players, things like that. And then I get in the trenches on the actual contracts, and you talk about how do you learn your team, how do you learn the new organization. As you negotiate around the contracts for everybody, then you get to the cuts of every deal and every player, and because everybody's personality comes out a little bit when you negotiate a contract. So part of that building the cap, that is what I would describe as the strategic stuff, and that's, you know, actually what a GM does and what a president of soccer does.
So are you, and I don't want to rush you through, I mean, obviously you had a huge win against LA Galaxy on Wednesday, but are you right now, like you personally, in the mindset of, okay, what do I need to do come December as far as, you know, who do we start talking with? Who are we scouting? Who are we looking to sign? Are you already in that mindset now?
Yeah, you have to do all your scouting. Start basically when our kind of seasonal year ends, September, in the roster, and when the rosters are frozen, it's kind of like, you know, if you're in the TV kitchen, you know, it's hands up, you know, the timer's expired.
Yeah.
And now you leave it to the judges to eat your food and watch the soccer team and let the coaches coach them up. But literally then, you know, you kind of take a deep breath for a week and then you say, okay, we have to start preparing for next year. And you're not going to necessarily make decisions. I think it's really important to emphasize, like, how the team does is going to 100% impact how you make decisions, what decisions you make. Are you more aggressive in changing a team? Are you more conservative? What's the market for your players? All those things are determined postseason. So, I mean, not entirely, but certainly in large part. So you basically got to scout a whole bunch of different players at different positions at different price points, and then based on how you decide strategically to change your team, then you chop and change and you build a puzzle for next year based on that scouting that's already in the hamper, even if you don't make those decisions till December.
You know, you're hearing a lot about it now in baseball, mostly because of Daniel Murphy, who's just unconsciously hot at the plate now. And you think, you've heard, hey, he's making himself a lot of money, or he's losing himself a lot of money. And then you'll get the people, the analytics people, who will go, well, this is a small sample size. You can't really sign or not sign people based on what they did in a compressed period of time. Does that theory apply to soccer? Can you look at somebody who's maybe having a good playoff run and think to yourself, if he's available, I might want to go after him, or think to yourself, well, I kind of want to look back at everything he's done and not just focus on a purple patch during the playoffs?
I'm definitely speaking of data guys, and not that I understand some of our guys are performing, but I definitely want to look at big samples and big chunks, but I qualify that a little bit by saying there are guys that are ready to play in big games and guys that are not. And oftentimes you can look at players' resumes. I mean, the thing in soccer is it's such a global community, and nowadays you can get data from anywhere. So you may have a small sample size of data, say, for the Sounders, but you can probably look back at that play, and if you played in any of the major leagues around the world, and say, okay, but here's the rest of the track record. And you can have some challenges then in terms of correlating data across leagues, but you can see, broadly speaking, you know, does this guy show up when the chips are down? And, you know, again, I think, you know, with Murphy hitting six games, knocking my Cubs out of the playoffs.
Sorry, man.
not a big Murphy fan, but that one, because of his batting average and all that, was seen to be a true aberration. And, you know, I've read some of the stuff about, you know, is there this idea of a clutch hitter? And it seems like the jury's still a little bit. But I do think you can look at the pedigree of a soccer player and say, okay, he's ready or he's not. Or he's going to get there or he won't. And, you know, ultimately it's all up to the players. And as a GM, you know, you're just trying to generalize and be right more often than you're wrong.
Give me one analytic that the common fan wouldn't even consider, yet you, when you're getting your presentation from your numbers people, throw out at you and you go, really? You're tracking that?
High-intensity distance is a concept.
I'm sorry. Please, speak slowly, Garth. You're talking to a radio disc jockey here. Please.
All right. High-intensity distance.
Okay, which means?
When a player runs fast, when a player sprints in a game or in a training session. So for us, we monitor our athletes every day. So on the field, off the field, monitor their sleep, but, you know, the whole program. And one of the things, one of the metrics that we use to identify whether or not they're being trained properly, whether they're at elevated or normal risk of muscle injuries or breaking down, is this idea of high-intensity distance. You have to train yourself at a certain amount during the week to be healthy and perform at your highest level. And likewise, if you do too much, you could be at risk. And, you know, in game situations, we look at HID in terms of having the stress on our players. You know, if he had to do a lot of this, does this mean, you know, he wasn't in the right positions? Does it mean he's working really hard? If he does that mean we need to unload him during the week and give him some pro days? So that kind of day-to-day training thing is something that we rely on quite a bit, and I think it's becoming commonplace in our industry.
Now, are you looking at how intense he's making a run, or are you looking at how often he is making a high-intensity run in a match or a practice?
You can do both, and you can break both out as subsets, but this idea of a total amount of high-intensity distance is what you're measuring. So if it could be, you know, a couple of sprints that all accumulate to a bigger number, or it could be some big long runs that accumulate to the same thing. Both are versions of high-intensity distance, and there's certainly different things, and you look at different qualities to them, but the broad category, the broad idea is this high-intensity distance, because that appears to wear on the body a little bit more than, you know, the normal running and movement of soccer.
And do you also factor in the fact that your guys specifically are making those runs on turf more often than not?
The data from turf is really inconclusive. There's some things that suggest that moving back and forth between turf and grass lead to a higher rate of muscle fatigue, which can lead to injuries. But as you imagine, it's really hard to isolate an injury and say it's because of this. Again, you need really large sample sizes to say, you know, we're getting hamstring strains at a higher percentage because of, you know, this one factor that we're able to isolate and disprove all others. I mean, most of the time, injuries are a combination of things. And, you know, can turf be a factor in joint issues? Yes, over long periods of time. But again, even within a season, that's less likely to occur. You definitely have guys who lack cartilage in certain places. You know, if they have bad knees, things like that, bad ankles, that might not fare quite as well, again, over time or twice in a week or on short rest on turf. But even that is affected by where in the turf's life cycle you're in. So, for example, we're in year 4 of our turf cycle right now, so it's probably the most beaten down and hard and fast. But we're going to replace it next year, and then it will become much softer. And so, honestly, in order to have meaningful data on turf injuries, we have to go through an entire life cycle of a particular turf surface. And then even I think you're going to see variations between turf surfaces. So there's a lot of work to do yet, I think, in terms of, you know, what is, you know, and I would imagine, for example, that it would be worth looking at, is there a correlation between high intensity distance and turf? And we don't know those things yet. I think, you know, there's a lot of work in front of us to figure it out.
Do you roll your eyes when the haters come out talking about the turf or football lines, like I roll my eyes when the haters come out about RFK?
You know, I've spent a lot of places, and both are sort of immutable conditions. Whenever, you know, you have new stadium, all that 28, I think, and that's that was a 22-year process. I don't know if it's crushing all over again, but you know, here we're signed for, I think, for at least 14 years at CenturyLink. So, like, hey, man, if I get an eyeglass problem of still being the president of soccer here in 14 years and deciding on what surface we play on, those are high-class problems. Something's gone pretty well for you at that point.
Totally. All right. Well, let me ask you just a question or two about the action. First off, what did you see that you liked from Wednesday's match versus Galaxy, other than obviously the win? And what did you think that we need to shore up a little bit before we head into Sunday's match? And are you talking to Siggy about this, or is this Siggy's game and he's running with it?
He picks the lineups, and it's the way I think Jimmy GM is off the field, just field. No matter what the coach comes out with, you know, it's a super pressure-packed environment, and, you know, certainly you're going to have conversations about it, but at the end of the day, he makes the final call, and you go with it. You get, you know, you lock arms, and you support each other, and you give it your best shot. So we really did well. You know, we did last night. We saw it. We had good Dempsey, who saw this, struggled a little bit, and volunteered to come out and play midfield, and ran probably more in that game than he has in a couple of years even. Just an incredible work rate from him, and unbelievable that he volunteered for that. Likewise, Brad Evans sees Leo Gonzalez struggling and says, "Hey, man, I'll sign up. I'll play left back."
Yeah,
and gets in here and literally gets a special role where he's not running as much, and then literally spends the entire game bombing up and down the left flank.
Yeah,
and hopefully it's nothing serious. His MRI is happening right now. But could have a muscle issue. But just hearts of those guys, man, was awesome to see, and everybody sticking up for each other, and it was, for us, the Galaxy really were our nemesis. I mean, they knocked us out 5 years, and sort of to beat them finally was just a weight off our shoulders, and it was really emotional and just uplifting, and now we just got to get guys physically and ready to battle again on Sunday.
And this will be the last thing, because you and I need to wrap up so that we can watch. We're recording this on Thursday. We're watching Thursday's matches. You made it clear that you wanted to get this conversation in so that you could watch the matches. How do you watch these other playoff matches, especially in the Eastern Conference? You're not going to see these teams if you make it that far for at least a month. So how are you watching these matches? Are you watching them as a fan, or are you watching them as kind of a mini scouting report?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, in a month, in 6 weeks, you're going to make contract action decisions on every team that too. And so it's well worth your time to watch playoff games to see the coach second, not just the players, but the players he doesn't. And then you have to look at that and determine what the market is going to look like to acquire from within the league through free agency, through the reentry drafts, through waivers, et cetera, through trades. So you're doing that, and you're thinking through some of the strategy, trying to get in people's heads a little bit. But then you are also watching the games as a fan and about the playoffs. I think the games are fantastic. I mean, it's awesome to recreate the intensity of playoffs in any kind of, traditional supporter shield, regular season champ. Like, I kind of scored in the supporter shield. And again, I tip my cap to everybody who's won one, and I haven't won one. So I'm sure,
makes sense why you would scorn it.
Yeah, exactly, right? And they won it here last year in Seattle. So disrespect anybody that's won it, or to New York, it's like Ali Curtis and Jesse Marsh, who their first year together put a team together and won it, and that is really impressive. But in America, my point is that we have doubts, and not only should we not apologize for that, but we should embrace it. And I may not watch the NHL regular season that much, but I'm going to watch the Blackhawks play in the playoffs, and I'm going to watch the Cubs play in the playoffs. And the playoffs is part of our culture, and it's part of our society, and playoff games are awesome. I mean, in any sport. And, I just get fired up. There's so much fun to play in. And there's something fun to watch, like that game last night between Austin and Alfie and the DC United New England game. Like, every minute, every second of those games, you're sitting on the edge of your seat, back and forth and up and down. And is it a penalty? Is it, Jermaine Jones going to do? it was craziness. It was a really exciting, fun day. I'm hoping for the same tonight.
Well, I'm going to leave it to you, and I thank you, and we got you right in time. You're going right from here to watching the matches. So, Garth Lagerwey, thank you so much for giving us some time. I appreciate it, man.
No problem. No, take that.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.